The founders forgot that we had medical liberty.
We seem to be losing by taking the side of the middle. And we seem to constantly be losing.
I think Trump has made some kind of arrangements with Russia.
This person has made the allegations that they were a man.
If there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There is no second best crypto asset.
Let's talk about science.
I respect you and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, JF, because in a time when everybody was attacking me, when Sargon doxed me and smeared me, you were the only one who gave me a platform, and you were very kind in helping me put the truth out there.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? Sadi Handward says, once you see it, you can't unsee it. Carcinogens added to our food, toxic clothing, fluoride hormones, and microplastics in the water, vaccination, over-medication, and finally made. They are undoubtedly thinning the population. Only the wealthy have family doctors, resulting in poor health outcomes for the majority. Men need purpose. If no jobs are available, we don't have the motivation to reproduce. It's all deliberate. Oh yeah, definitely. It's everything is slop. Sometimes I'm at the grocery store and I don't even enjoy food anymore because everything is slop. No, Marby Dog, I won't be on Rumble because we saw that when I multi-stream on Rumble, it crashes both streams. So there's something wrong with the multi-streaming feature of Streamlabs when it interacts with Rumble. Something hasn't been updated on the side of Rumble. So when I do Rumble streams, it will be exclusive Rumble streams and then exclusive YouTube. But now I'm building the YouTube channel. Let's try to rebuild a mainstream YouTube channel. I'm sorry I have to shake you guys from one platform to the other, but I didn't get a choice. I was forced to move away from YouTube when it was under the iron fist of Susan Wojcicki. She was just designing rules to get me. She was targeting me with special rules, special invocations, special reasons to demonetize, even if I was doing everything in my power to respect the rules. They definitely had targets that they were going after. So YouTube was not a free market. I hope that they have learned from their mistake because we have developed an entire parallel internet. High Roller says, is Susan still there? No, unfortunately, she was taken away from us. She was taken away from us. I don't remember. I believe her... What was it? Her son died from an overdose, and then eventually she died from cancer like a year later, if I remember correctly. Don't quote me on it, but I think that this is the sequence. And, you know, I'm always there. I'm always there on Twitter to write a eulogy when someone dies, and I was there for... I was there certainly for her son. I don't remember if she has died. Well, let's settle it because it's important. Susan Wojcicki, is she dead? Susan Wojcicki, dead in 2024. So yes, I remember that. I thought, you know, sometimes when someone of your family dies, you go into some kind of a depression and your physiology is less likely to have the enthusiasm of living. And sometimes you end up dying of sadness. And I believe that her cancer showed up, not randomly, in a great moment of sadness in her life. All right, what do we have? Well, we have Candace Owen, who just came out with a live stream. Again, the biggest streamer of the world at this moment. It's great to see Candace do with... She's spreading thin. She is releasing info one day at a time. What she releases today is that the Egyptian planes were somehow in relationship with the FBI, basically, the American government, intelligence in general, because they made a stop in Delaware. And various lines of arguments suggest, and I think it's quite credible, that they made a stop there in relationship with the FBI, some FBI officers. And so that doesn't mean necessarily that the FBI planned the killing of Charlie Kirk, but it means that whatever the reason for this Egyptian plane to have been there on the day Charlie Kirk was assassinated certainly had, that there was an exchange of information with American intelligence service, perhaps even a renting of cars with renting of plates, that kind of stuff. Sharp says, just got here, JF has had, hope you make some cash. Well, we'll see, you know. I used to make a great living from YouTube. Then they demonetized me. John Drake says, is she really bigger than Rogan? I guess you could say perhaps Rogan is equivalent size, but in terms of streaming live and being alone monologue style, that's what I call a streamer. I wouldn't totally call Joe Rogan a streamer. I think he's an interviewer who streams. A slight difference in my view. She does streaming in the streaming tradition. So we'll have to talk about what Elon says about poverty, because this is going to be an increasing discourse that you'll hear about AI. This old delusion, it's AI utopianism, this old delusion that AI will fix societal problems like poverty. And you had him speak to a Saudi crowd here.
But AI and humanoid robots will actually eliminate poverty. And Tesla won't be the only one that makes them. I think Tesla will pioneer this, but there will be many other companies that make.
He says AI and robots will eliminate poverty. Tesla will not be the only one doing it.
Humanoid robots. But there is only basically one way to make everyone wealthy, and that is AI and robotics.
And we can't talk about robotics without AI.
This is utopia, because poverty is an unsolvable problem. Poverty is what people have to do to survive. And there is no limit to it. If you give them robots, they'll make more babies. They'll drain more of the energy from the robots. If you make their lives more easy, they will just make more babies until you can't produce enough robots for all of them. So there is no solution to poverty without eugenics. You either combine the two or you fail at eliminating poverty. Jeremiah says, ads are interrupting the live stream. It's annoying, distracting from the conversation, and entirely coded. Okay. Well, I'll think about it. I could remove the ads because I pushed this button not out of really wanting it, but it was offering me. Delay ads, create ads, insert ad. I think the next time I start the stream, I will have the choice to remove them. And if you tell me it's annoying, I will remove them, because I don't think I derive much of my income anyway from ads. It's always been more about super chats. And I think that I would like if YouTube could become my main platform for super chats. If you send a big amount, it's always better through Streamlabs because they take less. But the YouTube super chats are they've been generous to me. They've been very successful. Somehow people like the YouTube super chats better than using alternative platforms. So next time I will try to remove the ads. So poverty is a bottomless pit, because when you solve it, there's more poor people showing up to drain your services. So there is no finite solution to poverty, except if you control people's reproduction. And this is where we have to be scared of of this behavior, of these arguments, because when Elon Musk says the most likely outcome is that AI and robots make everyone wealthy, in fact, far wealthier than the richest person on Earth. By this, I mean that people will have access to everything from medical care that is superhuman to games that are far more fun than what exists today. We do need to make sure that AI cares deeply about truth and beauty for this to be the probable future. There will certainly be a gain of productivity associated with AI. We can already see it in the domain of programming, content generation. It's amazing what AI can do at this point. It can counsel me when I write my cookbook. It can tell me, like, is gazpacho Spanish or Italian? Oh, I don't remember. Grok, is it Spanish or Italian? Very efficient. And when this gets transferred into real-world robots that can basically replace the low-skill worker, definitely there's going to be gains of productivity. But at the same time, these gains of productivity will be subject to a division of the pie in human society, because it's always like this. There's always an injustice in the distribution aspect of wealth. All societies have always been that way, and the closest we got to something fair, kind of, is capitalism. But even capitalism, there's all sorts of parasitic forces, corruption, people manipulating stocks, and in the end you end up having, no matter what you do, you end up having an inequitable distribution of wealth. Meanwhile, at the bottom, those people who don't have wealth, their revenge is that they can use your society however they want to make more babies. And the more you make their life easy, the more they will make babies, which is why it's kind of surprising what's happening in Canada in terms of MAID. And it's kind of surprising because we have basically taken over the medical management of every aspect of one's life, including reproduction. This is why it gets scary, because on the one hand, you have AI suggesting to become the central authority. And on the other hand, we have all of these human systems like medicine that have developed to control people's behavior. And the birth pill is just a spectacular example, if you want to make a case for this. The birth pill didn't exist 100 years ago. Suddenly it exists. It's a medical thing. And so suddenly you have doctors intervening in the rate of reproduction of women because they're counseling these pills, and they are therefore doing antinatalism, activist antinatalism in society. Now combine this with AI and the fact that more and more doctors will be guided by AI, and AI just has gained access to rates of human reproduction. And the problem is that evolution works on people pursuing their own self-interest. But AI has a different set of interests. It will be programmed in whatever ways, and maybe it's going to have these good beliefs inserted by its controllers. Elon keeps talking about this. We have to make sure that AI is good. He says, we do need to make sure that AI cares deeply about the truth and beauty for this to be the probable future. Truth and beauty is always relative, especially if you're in a domain where you don't have a choice. Either you make people wealthy and you control eugenics, or you fail at making people wealthy, because there's an infinite flow of birth coming from the third world and coming from our own countries. And there's no way you can eliminate this. So throw this to an AI, and inevitably the AI is making eugenic decisions. So an AI will be having a conception of what is beauty, what is to be pursued. Whether that conception is vicious and whether the AI has secret plans, we won't even know. But leaving that aside, even if it pursues what you think is the good, what is the good? And here we are bumping our heads against the limit of the moral world. There is nothing good. Moral nihilism. There is good, good for who? Good for you, good for me, good for my feelings, good for my children. All of this is different. There may be something that's good for you. There may be something that's good for me. There may be something that makes me feel good, that I think is good, but it's really not good for my reproduction. So is it good for my genes or is it good for my feelings? Ked's dad says, please, JF, I don't want to go on my roof. Well, don't go on your roof, bro. Just calm down. Calm down. Don't go on the roof. Don't go on the roof. John Drake says, decentralization is the only path to freedom. LLMs run locally will help. Still, I'm worried about an AI built to rule them all. Definitely, definitely. We attain also with AI the problem of the centralization of authority. Inevitably, even if you were to run on your own computers, AI will still have a central recipe that will be produced to run on your computer. And I'm extremely afraid that a political AI that gives political order to human civilization will be in a way, even if accidentally, even if it's programmed for the search for good and truth, even Grok, it will have its blind spots, and its blind spots will be inherited by the corporation that built it, the kind of employees that built it. And here you can see that the exclusion of the white man from the employment market will have an effect on these things eventually. We can already see it, the wokeness of ChatGPT, unquestionable. Even Grok is stuck with some degree of wokeness left over, even if Elon Musk himself doesn't want it to be there. So clearly we already have signs. We don't even have to wait for it to come. We already have signs that AI is taking its own direction, and it's taking it sometimes against their own bosses. Elon the other day was saying, I'm so frustrated about the wokeness of Grok. We worked so hard to get it out. It's still there. Sometimes you have a core of undoable, deeply held belief in the AI. And it's probably been integrated through the training set, and you may never quite remove it. Ked's dad sends a super chat, $5. Thank you so much. He says, JF, can you send me your roof pole blueprints? I have work I need to do, and I don't want to go on the roof. Well, quite simple. I bought these aluminium super extensible poles that you can screw at the end of each other. So they're 6 foot. They're available at Home Depot or that kind of hardware store. So just buy 5 or 6 of them. And now keep in mind, it's going to be heavy because you have a lot of leverage length working against you. And then just duct tape at the end, whatever you need to duct tape. So if it's a camera, I duct tape the camera. You can duct tape a paint roll, if it's painting that you need to do. Whatever you need to do, just duct tape it. Or if you want to be more fancy, you can have a little screw system that squeezes it in. But it's as simple as this. The poles already exist. They are the aluminium cylindric poles that are extensible, and they are extensible to infinity. Now you're not gonna be able to lift them above 6 or 7, I would say, but they cost a lot. They cost $60 a piece, so it's kind of if you want the full length that gets to your roof, it's almost $200-$250. So the problem of central authority is that humans are never evolutionarily incentivized to dump their interest into a central authority. And you have the problem that this authority will make arbitrary decisions that happen to be disadvantageous to a subsection of the population. Same thing I was saying to Sam Harris in my blogging about him 10 years ago. The moral landscape doesn't exist because there's a bunch of people in society that have different genetic interests than yours. And if you start defining a societal project that excludes them, you are creating a genetic war. Now they start being incentivized at a revolution. They don't want to trust the AI. And so the challenge is, okay, so therefore you have to define the AI to be advantageous enough for whatever fraction of the population you want to control. So you have to say, let's say I want 90% of the population to benefit from this AI. Well, then you have a 10% of revolutionaries that are born in your society because they're targeted by the actions of the AI. And they are kind of legitimately pursuing their own biological interest at trying to mess up your AI project, which could take various forms. There will be political speech against the moral project. There will be civil rights struggles. There will be civilian conflicts and potentially even terrorism. Sadie Edwards says, only keep bullion bars and coins from a reputable mint. That way you get spot. if you want to go that extreme, you can. Personally, I don't recommend physical gold. I'm more into Bitcoin. That's my way of exiting the system. So the problem also is that the only way AI will have these outputs is through human slavery. So AI will have to have its agents, and the decisions of AI will come to matter in your life because humans will implement it through fascistic application of things like vaccine. I mean, ask an AI, should people be forced to be vaccinated? The problem is that if you apply the rationality from a leftist fascistic perspective, let's say you assume that vaccines work, you assume that people do transmit diseases that end up killing others, the AI is going to just apply the rationality of the leftist that he's learned by going to the web, and it's going to be like, oh yeah, you are guilty of murdering grandma for not taking the vaccine. You're going to have just AI being the mirror of society, of the already existing social pressures for control of human behavior. And down the line, it's whether you are a controlling society or a liberal society. And we've been veering toward the controlling during the last 50 years. I was also, you know, even what Candace Owens was saying on her live stream today, she says, you know, it's becoming very clear that Charlie Kirk was killed because he was a slave, because we're all slaves. And he found something. He did something wrong, and to create a model for the other slaves, to tell the other slaves, you better not go there like Charlie Kirk, they killed him publicly. Yes, it's incredible that we're in 2025, but her reading is correct. Charlie Kirk ventured, and as she frames it, he must have discovered something. He must have discovered something, and he was about to do stuff about it. Cat's Dead says, JF, if it works well, I will show you my work. And also, you should totally get a patent. Oh boy, I'm not thinking much about the patenting of my poll system anymore. I am so into publishing a book. I need to publish a book because it's going to take too long. It's going to take still a couple of years for me to get the moral signal. and I don't, and the revolutionary phenotype is selling relatively well still, but I don't want my Amazon page to die. I don't want it to slowly become uninteresting to people. So I need a book. I need a book that I can sell to normies, so that I can, so that eventually they can say, "Oh, I'll also buy the revolutionary phenotype." So that's why I think it's important I publish my cookbook, because I think some people will start knowing about me from the cookbook, and then they'll get into the revolutionary phenotype. We have a very different government behavior these last few years since Trump is back. We now have HHS publishing about sex-rejecting procedures, that is basically sex surgery, sex change. HHS commissioned a diverse group of authors to engage in the most comprehensive study to date of the treatment of children and adolescents for gender dysphoria. The findings in the peer-reviewed reports are clear. Sex-rejecting procedures for children are dangerous. Infertility, loss of sexual function, reduced bone density, metabolic and cognitive effects, surgical complications. So, yeah, I mean, everyone would know this. We didn't need a study. But sometimes that's how the system seeps itself in. You know, that's how these leftists and LGBT activists, they went into the system. They made it a special field that was unquestionable from any other branch of medicine. And they kind of declared, you know, maybe 10 years ago, 15 years ago, that this is going to be the approach, and we're going to try to apply it younger and younger. And they developed a very, very loose science about all this, you know, little studies with studies that are built on the assumption that, well, at least they didn't commit suicide, so we kind of helped them, right? And that is not the way to proceed to get good science. The assumption of your starting point is everything in science. It's what we measure when we use a control group. But if you work with a control group that has high level of suicide, and you kind of discount all of the dark stuff that you cause in people's life by choosing your observation windows, you know, a lot of these studies, they would not follow up over the whole year of the person. They would follow over windows of months. Same thing with the vaccines, by the way. It's like, what does it tell me that a vaccine doesn't hurt you within a month or 3 months? What about 10 years down the line? What's happening with these people? And we have, of course, the regret of surgery, the fact that they destroyed their lives, the fact that when they get out of this little fad of getting attention from leftist and trans militants, it gets very dark. It gets very dark when you've destroyed your own sexual organs. Now, I'm with the government there. If an adult person wants to do that to themselves and they're ready to pay for it, I have no issue. Cosmic Code says, when I am getting older, I want JF to also grow old and keep streaming into my pension years. No mercy. I'll try doing that. That's my life goal. I will try doing it, and I will try remaining a streamer up to my death. I'll be the oldest and longest streak streamer. I'm telling you, I might very well be streaming by the time Candace Owens is in retirement. I will have started streaming before Candace Owens, before Joe Rogan, and I will keep streaming after them. That's what I'm trying to accomplish. Sean B says, AI is still not as smart as me when it comes to searching the internet for specific things. 90% wrong when I use Grok. Oh, bro, I wouldn't say that. Grok has been extremely powerful with me. Just genius mathematical levels, really, in ways that you can't, even a very, very intelligent human cannot know as much as Grok. To me, Grok has already surpassed the PhD in math level, and he's stellar in his understanding of the zeta function, Riemann conjecture. You ask very specific question and he finds exactly what you wanted. No, I don't share your experience here. I don't know in what field you are asking about. You can ask Grok to design an entire MATLAB script. He's going to do it just like this, about anything you want. Sadie Henward says, that thing says trust the science, like a 60-year release. I don't know what you mean by that. 60-year release? Dinesh D'Souza is being critical toward Nick Fuentes. Nick finally makes his move to put the socialism back in National Socialism. He's taking up Goebbels' point that capitalism is evil and socialism is the heart of Nazism. Nationalism is merely a qualifier for socialism. National is the adjective and socialism is the noun. Interesting that Nick Fuentes is starting to get flack for a kind of pivot that I've seen, yes. First, Nick Fuentes, I don't know that he's an economically right-wing person that much. He's a statist. He likes politics. When you watch his streams, he's all about these detailed plans to take over politics. It's really not my thing, because I'm a true libertarian, laissez-faire, withdrawn type of guy. It's like I wouldn't mess with politics. I wouldn't try to gain control of the system, because that's just not my thing. It's not my temperament. But Nick is that way, and you can see that his kind of progressivism is showing up a little more. And I think that's natural, and that's not to be criticized of him. It's because there will be a serious question to ask about what are the political advancements that we would want to see in the coming 10, 20 years. And there will be a serious question around whether the Republican Party is even a vehicle for this. Because the Republican Party isn't giving us a laissez-faire government approach. The Republican Party isn't giving us a small state. So really, is it a sin for Nick Fuentes to flirt with progressive people in a potential alliance of various interests so that we can advance certain other policy objectives in a realistic way and even against the Republican Party's will? Because there's going to be a choice to make for the Republican Party in the next 5 years. And it's all going to influence, I think it's going to be ultimately determined by what do we hear in the 2028 election. In 2028, they will have to decide, are we continuing on the neocon, blind support for Israel at all time approach, or do we have to signal something else to our base? And don't get me wrong, I'm not stupid. I don't expect the Republican Party to turn against the Jews. That's probably not happening. But will they start? And I think you can already see it in the way J.D. Vance approaches this question. He's always walking on eggshells when he talks about Israel. And he's always trying to signal, well, we shouldn't be controlled by another foreign country. But he's never quite going to say, we're not going to be controlled by Israel anymore. So that is a development that will happen. It has to happen before 2028, because the Republican Party, because you can see the Jews are putting ultimatums. The Ben Shapiro crisis on an almost every day. The Josh Hammer types. They're saying, these neo-Nazis will destroy the Republican Party. What they actually mean is we will destroy the Republican Party if you let these people in. That's what they actually mean. What they actually mean, the Ben Shapiros of this world, is we're going to lose if you give us the choice between voting right-wing and voting for someone like Nick Fuentes, or even someone loosely connected to Nick Fuentes. So that is very interesting. They are in ultimatum mode and in panic mode. Now, in this context, they may very well win the Republican Party. It depends on how much money is poured in. It depends on how much the Republican politicians start perceiving the rise of a new generation that they must talk to. But they might very well gain the control of the Republican Party in a little bit the way they gained the control of TPUSA, you know? So if that happens, it's absolutely normal for Nick Fuentes to be starting to free himself some margin onto the left, because we may very well be in a situation where the interest of white people would be better served by the Democrats. Now, I know that this is hard to believe. It's perhaps hard to believe for some of you, because you've known the Democrat Party. If you've just been following politics recently, you know the Democrat Party as just deeply anti-white. But the Democrat Party is a party that is sometimes on the side of workers, and many times in their past, they have intervened in the economy in a way that creates jobs that benefit white people. I'm not talking 8 years ago. I'm not talking under Barack Obama. But if you go back to Bill Clinton, there was this idea that if you're going to be a statist, because we have two choices of statism here. We don't have a non-statist option. So if you're going to be a statist, you might as well be a statist in a way that favors, you know, the white working class. And that might be the outcome in 2028, where Nick Fuentes will root for perhaps the Democrats if he has lost his fight to infiltrate the GOP. And if the Jews have put into action their ultimatum to basically crash the GOP, because it lets people like Tucker Carlson in, then we're going to have to play the game of politics, and perhaps a Democrat victory from a version of the Democrat Party that is much less anti-white than the current one. That could happen. The Raffone says, to think modern lefts would or even could separate themselves from their minority pets is insane. Well, call me insane. Call me insane for now if you'd like. I'm telling you, this is a possible course of the future. And come back and call me insane in 5 years from now. I mean, here's the thing. Minorities would be willing to vote for the Democrats even if they weren't that anti-white. So in a way, the Democrats are shooting themselves in the foot when they're explicitly going anti-white. They will realize at some point, from the political strategic standpoint, that it doesn't make sense. They will realize we have the minorities already on our side, and it's not because we sponsor some car factory of white people in Ohio that we're going to lose the black vote. This is what the Democrats must understand. Now, I'm not saying they must understand because I root for them, but I'm saying strictly from a strategic perspective, they have to realize that there is a whole generation rising that actually is plastic and willing to move on left or right of economics. And I'm just that way. I am deeply a right winger. And I believe that libertarian economics, economics that leave the least amount of state intervention and that let actual free market flourish, is the best way to manage societies. But I know that the system is so far from this that we don't have an achievable political goal in wanting to reach that state. So if it's going to be dirty corruption all around, I can, for the purpose of strategic and tactical causality in the political system, I can accept to root for the Democrats if they were pursuing their anti-white line less, and in fact, if they were pro-white, if they were suggesting to use the state in a way that helps families rather than fight them. There is a way the Democrats could win my heart in that, not that I would believe in their communism, I never will, but in the fact that, anyways, the two sides are communist to me. High Roller says, he views GD same as Tucker, no trust, but can be supported for practical reasons. Yes, okay. Cat's Dead has sent a super chat. Thank you so much for supporting the show. He says, JF, you have good takes on Nick Fuentes, but I disagree that he will ever be a Vance supporter. Well, I've raised the alarm. I don't know that he will be, but I was like, it's looking like he's freeing that space up, and I'm worried. Now, it would be fantastic if the Nick Fuentes phenomenon is so strong that we get in 2028 a Vance that is explicitly taking some of our positions. I don't know that we could get everything from him, but if we could just get... Can we even get a kind of walk back of the systematically pro-Israel position of the political class? Is it even possible? And would we believe him? Like, if Vance was telling you, I'm running for president and I'm going to be the America First president and there's not going to be any more kneeling to Israel, could we believe him? That's the problem. Even if he was to promise this, his history shows that he was groomed by neocons. And so would we believe him? I don't know. Rosenbar on America, if America turns against Israel. And here you see, this is every week. These days, we have a new ultimatum by Jews every day or every week. Rosenbar is telling us the strategy that I've laid out, which is, I believe that the Jews are starting increasingly into dropping America under the bus and leaving America and rebuilding elsewhere in possibly India, China. And she just states it as explicit as I've said it. Now, that was me laying these hypotheses for the last 2 years. Listen, Rosenbar basically laying out that this is the plan.
I don't know that if America's turning on Israel, then America deserves what's going to happen to them for it.
It'll be worse for America than Israel.
It will, because Israel will just move on to India and other countries, and America will fall.
Not just that, the sleeper cells.
America will fall, and that's what they want. I mean, that is what they want, is that the Constitutional Republic of the United States for America will fall. But I think Trump sees that we have to be, America has to be independent of the British Empire too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's Israel's independence too, that we're all separated from that.
Yeah.
And that's the octopus, and we're all separated from that. I don't.
So this is fascinating. First, there's the threat. So if you stop, if J.D. Vance was to come out, or if a candidate in 2028 was to be truly for the independence of America from Israel, we would drop you under the bus. We would crash your society. We would divest our investments. By the way, divesting your investments from Israel is illegal in the U.S., but divesting away from the U.S. is not illegal. So somehow we have a protection that is afforded to the Israeli market that we don't even afford to ourselves. You cannot boycott Israel in America, but you can boycott America in America. So she's saying, basically, we will boycott you, we will withdraw our money, and we'll have all of our money flows toward India. And Marby Dog says, please go to India. Yes, Rosen. Rosen, go be a superstar in Bollywood. Go be a superstar in Bollywood. I can't wait to hear Rosen comedy in Indian. Can't wait. And there's going to be an Indian coming into our home, and there's going to be a little joke, and the crowd's going to be, ha, 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 ha. And then you're going to serve some curry as part of your TV show in India. I can't wait to see it. But this is the threat that they're making, and I've been saying it. If the Jews were to take their money and run, it would crash the economy of the U.S. in a way that we should celebrate. I've been saying it. Just accept poverty. Just accept that you're going to have a little deflationary effect on the stock market, maybe an unemployment crisis. There's going to be adjustments to be made. There's going to be a reaction, because any pulling away of massive amounts of money and stock market control and market cap, it's always going to be imposing some degree of suffering on a society. But make it happen, please. And let us just prepare for survivalism. Let's have our food reserves, our cans of beans, and just be prepared at any time to survive a 6 month or 1 year, of economic downturn. It's absolutely fine. Their threat is very empty, because the reality is, oh yeah, you think you're gonna be in India, having the same kind of successes you've had in European society. Good luck. I'd like to see you try. Or I'd like to see you try China. I'd like to see you try Japan. I mean, here, there you have different populations that are much harder to live among. You have massive corruption going on in these countries and massive tribalism. I would be finding it hilarious to see them try to overtake technocratically the stock markets and the mechanisms of these societies. It would be beautiful to see. Marby Dog says we should also solve half of our debt due. Most of the $38 trillion is owed to the Fed Reserve. That is okay, yeah. I do believe that we should be careful about this. The leftists view this, you know, and this is where an alliance with the leftists may be interesting at some point, because the philosophy of the leftists with respect to debt is, oh, don't worry about it. We're not going to pay it. And that would be kind of an hilarious thing to do, just dissolve the debt bylaw. If you're going to crash our society, we don't care anymore. We're just chilling in our trailer parks, jobless, and we owe you nothing. Bankruptcy. That is a possibility for the future, a crashing America. But I don't think it's coming in the next 5 years. I think it's going to come after the AI robotics boom. In line with Philip Fabry's history of the next century, he says, you know, it could happen right now, and that was many years ago, or there could be a last wave of economic productivity gain for the U.S., and that last wave would be AI and robotics. Now, if we have such highs of productivity that the economy booms again, or even if it's in a small way, that's not necessarily impacting everyone's life, but even if it's just a small boom, the AI robotics revolution comes and might fuel a lasting effect for 20 years, 30 years. And then we can face the absolute crash. I think everything is lining up for, say, 2050, 2060. You're going to have all of these factors coming out to play. You're going to have the pressure from the rising generations against blind support to Israel, the pressure of the robotics that will have made their gain, but then everything is going to have flattened up and we're going to have extracted that lemon, and the growing state and the unsustainability of our social systems and the diversity at the demographics level. I think all of this comes crashing down, and the fact that the Jews are pissed because they perceive anti-Semitism at a threshold that is so so sensitive that it's like they won't even have to wait for 2050, 2060 to be pissed at Americans, and now they start withdrawing their money, and there will be a massive economic crisis, and they will attempt basically to do a rotation of leading powers. They will try to enact a strategy of a form of third worldism, where perhaps Israel is at the head of the world, of the old world, the old continent, and perhaps with outposts of the Jewish diaspora in the Asian world, and the Asian world rising through perhaps local liberation, perhaps a desolidification of the Chinese government, and perhaps basically a strategic advantage over the U.S. through demographic stability and higher IQ and higher training in sciences. So all of these factors I take from Philip Fabry's History of the Next Century, and it makes me say, yes, what Rosenbauer is talking about, it's going to happen. Maybe not exactly now, but it's going to happen over the next 30 years. There will be a divestment of Jewish interest in American politics, which will be combined with the rise of figures like Nick Fuentes, who are capable of putting aside a little bit of the economic axis of politics, because we need to win. Because it's an existential fight anyway. We need to win left or right. We need to win for our people to continue existing. That is the current fight of America. And so to those who say, well, Nick is becoming a leftist, yes, and it's okay. He has to. We have to. Stu Peters says, Rep. Marjorie Taylor Greene to Donald Trump. Yeah, so Marjorie Taylor Greene was dropped under the bus by Donald Trump. She was called a traitor.
I was called a traitor by a man that I fought for six years for. And I gave him my loyalty for free. I won my first election without his endorsement, beating 8 men in a primary. And I've never owed him anything, but I fought for him for the policies and for America first. And he called me a traitor for standing with these women and refusing to take my name off the discharge petition. Let me tell you what a traitor is. A traitor is an American that serves foreign countries.
Ouch. She's right, you know. She's right, and arguably Trump qualifies as this much more than Marjorie Taylor Greene. It's fun to see Marjorie Taylor Greene developing and basically developing a wing of the Republican Party that is seriously questioning the neocon side of it. I love it, but at the same time, I'm always reminded that Marjorie Taylor Greene disavowed Nick Fuentes. And that is kind of a line on our CV to me. We have nice developments in Canada. So in Canada, in Alberta, there is currently the Prime Minister, Danielle Smith, the Premier, as they call it, I think, in Canada. She is demanding that the legislature, and it might very well happen, use the notwithstanding clause to pass three bills that are meant to protect parental rights in the face of LGBT activism and trans activism. So the problem in Canada is we have an entire whole liberal system. The Supreme Court is very likely to try to make it hard for a conservative government to fight the LGBT activism, the ideological trans stuff. So, for example, the fear is that if she comes with a law that would give parents the prior rights to consent and prior rights of information before you start calling their kids with the opposite sex pronouns, there's a fear that that the Supreme Court of Canada would bar this. But in Canada, there is an option, which is the notwithstanding clause, which makes it so that if you state explicitly in a law that you're violating the Constitution, you can violate the Constitution. So if you say this law violates the Constitution, but we don't care, then you can violate the Constitution. This is one of the beauties of Canada. Now, typically, this has been used again and again for liberal leftist powers for their own advantage. But for the first time, we have the Alberta Premier, Danielle Smith, who is saying we should use this to force in our three bills, and the three bills are meant to force, to basically make it harder on trying to trans kids, including, for example, if a teacher wants to start using pronouns of the other sex, start doing gender affirmation treatment, he must inform the parents that he's doing it. So that kind of thing. Or he must ask before and whether the parent consents. So just the fact that he would be forced to inform by law would mean that the parents could say, oh, well, I don't want my child with this teacher anymore. And they they could move on to another teacher. I think that this shouldn't even require the notwithstanding clause. It's really just because we have a Supreme Court of cucks and liberals. This should be up to the local legislature anywhere to decide, is the parental right a priority here, or is the child's supposed right as a potential trans person? This should be decided by legislatures everywhere. But now we might have the use of the notwithstanding clause to make this move in Alberta. The premier has called on the legislature to do this. The trans activists are crying on camera. So I love that this is the direction it's taking, because Alberta might very well become the last stand of parental rights in Canada. John Drake says, she's horrible on the separation question. She's all talk. I hope she comes through on this at least. Yeah, sometimes, you know, I would like her to be harder, but it's the best we have. And she's playing a game that is still not bad. Still not bad. And most of the time I enjoy that we have her instead of anything else you could get in Canada. Kids Dead says, when I get BTC rich, I will super chat 1K to Papa JF. That is the mission. Oh yeah, I used to have. Sometimes people have sent $800, $1,000 in super chat. Those were the good days. Excellent work by Keith Woods. Keith Woods has been releasing on his Twitter account this morning, Hitler did not have Kallmann syndrome. So there was a Channel 4 documentary that came out recently, and it spread virally on the internet. And it was this whole idea that Hitler through a genome analysis, they would have detected that he had a small penis. And a lot of people wanted me to comment about it, and I was like, this must be bullshit, because this is the dream of every female researcher, proving that Hitler had a small penis. I mean, there's so much nagging in just the idea that it comes from a woman. You know it had to come from a woman. And so I was like, this doesn't sound very credible to me, but at the same time, I didn't get the chance to do enough research. So I didn't know, like, what genes did they use to make this conclusion? Well, Keith Woods did the research, and I've commented, excellent work by Keith Woods. This is an example of moral demands influencing science. Every Marxist female researcher would dream of proving that Hitler had a small penis. It's the golden goose, psychotherapeutic implications, Freudian theories of overcompensation, allowance of body shaming for a man because he's evil, right? But the goal was too sweet, too interesting, and the science was botched. Basically, what Keith Woods demonstrates is that if you have a copy of this gene, many people have a copy of this gene. You don't suffer from Kalman syndrome. You need a copy of this gene and so many other things before you get Kalman syndrome. So he was a bearer of just one of the genes that doesn't give you the disease. It's one of the genes that is believed to be needed in a combination of other genes for you to get the disease. And people were pointing out in the reply section, if he had Kalman syndrome, apparently, we would have known just looking at him. So because it comes with other effects than having a small penis. And you can see the researcher that has made this claim that eventually got taken in the media. She's ashamed a little bit because she's an interview and the interviewer asks her, isn't it exaggerated a little bit what they're saying about your study in the press? And she's like, kind of. And so it's like, wow, this was botched from the start. The whole communication enterprise was botched. You have to be careful when you're a scientist. People will give you credence and credit for what you say. They will believe it. So she said these things to a journalist. The journalist framed it even worse. But down the line, Hitler didn't have a small penis. He had a gigantic cock. Gregor T. says, lol, did anyone see that pic that shows the outline of his dick through his pants? Oh yeah, so we had the internet sleuths to debunk the study before Keith Woods had made his debunk. People were trying to map the penis of Hitler through speeches and video that we have of it by looking through his pants. Amazing. Ked's Dead says, JF, did you follow England? And what do you think of his recent Nick hate? I don't. And I've never liked this guy, never listened to this guy. I've always found him irrelevant. I just don't. So I don't even know what he's saying and what you're telling me about. Russia officially is returning to Syria, according to this account, to protect it from Israel. Russia and Syria have come to an agreement to redeploy Russian peacekeeping troops to the Syrian-Israeli border, according to the Israeli Broadcasting Corporation reports. I don't know, because I tend to see this guy as very much aligned with Israeli interests. I don't know, but the way he took over Syria made me believe that he's been placed there by Mossad. Now, did things change? Perhaps. Perhaps he was reasoned with by Putin, and I don't know. We have a little confrontation, ICE agents, and there were people trying to block the work of ICE agents as they are doing deportation operations. Ooh, that is a lot of pepper spray. That is the high volume one. Ooh, generously layered. Those are not crowds freely protesting. Those are hostile crowds that are blocking physically, therefore kidnapping these federal agents and interfering with their function. Meanwhile, in Canada, a lot of Americans have no idea what's going up in Canada, but a few months ago, the Supreme Court ruled that a huge swath of Vancouver's suburbs actually belongs to an Indian tribe. These Aboriginal land claims are now going to explode across the country. There is a tribe that has started a lawsuit claiming half of New Brunswick. See, when I was living on the East Coast, I was living just right here on PEI. I now live here in Alberta, but I was living right here on PEI. I'm happy to be out of there. It all starts with these land acknowledgments, and it's like, I would like to acknowledge that we stand on the stolen property of the Indian tribe, blah, blah, blah. Now, the politicians, the corporates, they all say these things, so they look good, they look woke, they look open. But it's like, bro, you just acknowledged something here. And this may have legal implications, because if you keep saying, I stole this, I stole this, I stole this, well, then you're going to give away whatever you stole, right? At some point, there's going to be a judge that says, give it back. So, yeah, I have no problem with... I have no problem with giving large parts of lands to Indian people. I love them. I want them to be free and sovereign. I don't even want our government to have power over them, because I love the idea of having free people around me, that even if my government eventually becomes too oppressive of me, they'll be there to give me a hand. So I am absolutely amicable toward the Native Americans. But don't give them properties from people who paid for these lands and people who built these lands on the assumption that they wouldn't come back. Give them lands. Don't give them white people's property. And a last comment. There's starting to be massive subversion, and I see it in Brett Weinstein. There's a massive campaign right now to subvert the America First movement. And you have Brett Weinstein is kind of in panic mode trying to insert himself into the America First movement. But Brett, if you had a say on this movement, you could have been there 10 years ago. But no, you're starting to speak now because you feel that you're losing control to the rising generation. You feel that you couldn't kill that thing in The Hague, and you feel that you therefore now you need to come out to try to move the crowds in your direction, but you are not a legitimate member of America First. You define yourself as a far leftist, and you have never participated to that movement, nor am I a member of it. I'm a commentator about it. I'm not a member of it because I'm a Canadian. And so America First is a US movement. But it's fascinating to see Brett trying to make the case to Christians and saying, that's how you should think, Christians. He's saying that Christianity with the New Testament brought the idea of the golden rule. He's saying the golden rule has been the tradition in European societies, and right now it's under threat, because if white people start caring about themselves they won't care about us as much as they do about themselves, and therefore it's going to be a violation of the golden rule, and they will have therefore abandoned this good Christianity. And he's saying, stay with the good Christianity, don't go with the bad Christianity. And as I make the case in my expose, this is absolutely ahistorical. This idea that the golden rule has been integrated by whites in our politics and war and response to invasion, it never was. I list historical examples. The historical fact is that Christian civilization has never integrated the golden rule as binding all Christian behaviors. The Native Americans were not treated with the golden rule by the Western European colonialists. The Protestants of Germany were not treated with the golden rule during the 30-year war. The Muslims were not treated with the golden rule by the Crusaders. And of course, the civilians of Hiroshima were not treated with the golden rule by the American government. The golden rule, this idea that treat others as you would wish to be treated, has been integrated as a mode of social etiquette in European civilization. When we talk about wars or politics, Christian civilization has always been acting on different principles, almost at all times. We never extend to enemies or people who are hostile to our nations the olive branch, never. So Brett is trying to create a historical narrative that never existed really to try to frame what needs to happen with the America First movement. And in his view, what needs to happen is basically a continued denial of white identity. That's what he takes issue with. He's not going to phrase it as explicitly as this, but that's what he takes issue with very clearly. He wants the America First movement to be multiracial and not anti-Israel. Now, he may very well get part of this with Nick Fuentes, because Nick Fuentes, to an extent, has shown a lot of multiracial appeals and openness. But I don't think he's going to be able to detach the anti-Israel aspect, because there is a problem in the fact that the American technocratic class is under absolute puppetry, enslavement to elite interests that are way too unbalanced toward Israeli interests. That needs to change, and I don't think it's something that Nick could give up or walk back over. So that is it for tonight, boys. Tomorrow I will try to do a show, but I may start late. So maybe we'll have a show at 8, 9 p.m. Eastern time. I'll see when I'm available tomorrow. Much love, sleep well. And if you'd like to support the show, join the Patreon or the Subscribestar. The show needs your monthly support to keep going. I will see you all tomorrow when I can.